Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, May 8th, 2016. This is episode 1286. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now, thetracker.com, and enter the promo code TECHGUY for 30% off your entire order. And by TunnelBear. TunnelBear is a simple privacy app that makes it easy to browse privately and enjoy a more open internet. To learn more and get your free TunnelBear, visit trytunnelbear.com/TECHGUY. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and virtual reality appliances. Anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Easy to remember. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. I'd love to hear from you. Our website is techguylabs.com. We could talk about anything in tech, a question, a suggestion, an answer. All welcome at 8888-ASK-LEO. Do you care about Bitcoin? Does anybody care about Bitcoin? Does it even matter? Does Bitcoin even matter anymore? I love the kind of the story of Bitcoin, but I have a feeling it doesn't really matter anymore. Bitcoin was an alternative currency based on math, on cryptography, created by an anonymous fellow or persons named Satoshi Nakamoto about, 6 years ago, 7 years ago. He disappeared from the public view, or they disappeared from public view in about 2011, handing over the reins. So he wrote a paper and invented this idea that is really an interesting idea. They call it the blockchain. That's separate from Bitcoin. So Bitcoin's easy enough to understand. You know, all you have to understand is it's a currency not backed by a government. And you can make up a currency as long as both parties on either end of the transaction agree that it's worth something, whatever they agree that it's worth, that's what it's worth. I will trade you 3 hours of my labor for one Bitcoin, and that kind of, you know, there you go. As long as both sides agree, it's not illegal. You can't pay your taxes in it. But it has value as long as people take it for something. There's a cupcake store in San Francisco that'll take Bitcoin. There are even in some countries Bitcoin ATMs where you put in your governmental currency and trade it in for Bitcoin. Bitcoin has no physical manifestation. It doesn't have paper bills or metal coins or anything. It's just a number. You store it on your computer in a wallet. And you should back up the wallet because that's it. That's the value in the Bitcoin. And the coins are generated in this very clever way. And that's where the blockchain comes in. The idea is the blockchain is really just a ledger where people put in entries. You know, Joe sold 1.5 Bitcoins to Mary on this date. Except Joe isn't Joe. Joe's 147394417549. It's a number. And so is Mary. So it's anonymous in that regard. And the blockchain, the ledger, is maintained by everybody who has a wallet. The whole ledger is in the wallet. So you can verify transactions at any time. You can make a transaction. It's recorded in the blockchain for everyone to see and know. And the blockchain keeps track of how much Bitcoin you have in your wallet. So the blockchain is the thing that's kind of interesting. In fact, people are writing books and articles and talking about this now as if it's kind of a separate idea. But the guy who invented this, as I said, disappeared from public view in 2011. Public view, I don't know. Nobody ever really saw him or her or they, them. They just heard from them via email. But whoever this Satoshi Nakamoto is owns a significant number of Bitcoins. Think like a million Bitcoin, some huge number, you know, as you as one would. If you invent a currency, you probably keep a little bit of it for yourself. It was easy to generate Bitcoins early on. It gets harder and harder. That's part of the design of the blockchain. As you create new Bitcoins, each Bitcoin gets a little harder to make. And you make them by solving mathematical problems of all things. So people have in the past bought big, powerful computers. I guess they're still doing it to generate Bitcoin. And the problem is it's designed so that as the Bitcoin becomes more valuable, it becomes more expensive to produce. We don't want to have inflation, you know. Can't have inflation. So this last week, I guess, journals, the BBC, The Economist, two widely respected journals, said, we think we know who Satoshi Nakamoto is. He is this Australian guy named Craig Wright. It's not the first time he's been named as Satoshi Nakamoto. Gizmodo and Wired Magazine did it months ago. By the way, the same day that the Gizmodo and Wired Magazine folks said, we know who Satoshi Nakamoto is, the Australian tax authorities raided his home, not over Bitcoin, but because he had a little thing going on. It was kind of a clever little deal. He created a company, then created another company, transferred Bitcoin, not real Canadian, or I'm sorry, Australian dollars, but Bitcoin from one to the other, then claimed a tax write-off and a tax refund of $1.5 million Australian dollars. Hey, that's a nice work if you can get it. Eventually, the Australian tax authority caught into all this, and they said, wait a minute, you can't. And they raided Craig Wright. Same day he was revealed, I put that in quotes, I don't know if you saw the air quotes or heard them, revealed to be Satoshi Nakamoto, raided his home. He fled. He's in England now, avoiding prosecution over these phony refunds. And I think he's now announced that he's Satoshi Nakamoto, even though the real Satoshi Nakamoto has been hiding all this time, rightly so, because, well, problems could arise. Fear of governmental interference. Some governments, like the Chinese government, don't like Bitcoin. They've banned it. They feel like it undermines their own currency. And then there's always the tax authorities. He claims, he's written a blog post claiming that he has proven that he's Satoshi Nakamoto because he has the key to one of Satoshi Nakamoto's PGP accounts, except he doesn't. And the proof is spurious. Unfortunately, the BBC and The Economist kind of got fooled. But now everybody says, no. No, that's not, this is not Satoshi Nakamoto. So, oh well, the search goes on. I wonder, I mean, we haven't heard anything. In the past, it's been thought that Satoshi Nakamoto and others have been proposed as being Satoshi. The real one has stood up using his real crypto keys. By the way, this is a good use for cryptography. This is where cryptography really shows its strength, not only in Bitcoin and the blockchain and all that, because that's all based on the same math, but as identity. So you can't get your Bitcoin out unless you prove that you're that person using your cryptographic key. In fact, that's all this guy would have to do to prove that he is Satoshi Nakamoto is just move one of the Bitcoins Satoshi has. We know that are owned by Satoshi. He hasn't done that. He can't do that because he's not Satoshi. Doesn't really have the key. If he did, it'd be a simple proof. Look, watch. See that Bitcoin? I just moved it over there. Ha ha! I'm him. Nobody even knows who Satoshi is anymore. It's a mystery. He may not even be alive. He may not exist. Who knows? I like mysteries. It's a great story. But it doesn't mean anything. However, watch the blockchain. There are people, it's interesting. Imogene Heap, a recording artist, you might know her music. You probably do know her music. Has decided to sell her own music, not using a record label. And the ledger she wants to use, not Bitcoin, but the blockchain itself to keep track of for anti-piracy reasons. Who owns the song? Each song has like a digital signature. And we know who owns it. Clever, interesting idea. There's lots of ideas like that around blockchain. So watch. Keep your eye peeled. Not so much for Bitcoin. There's a lot of infighting in the Bitcoin community and disagreement over how it should proceed forward. And I think it's going to end up just being a mess. Not to mention this whole Satoshi thing. But the blockchain itself is a brilliant idea, and I think you're going to see more things take advantage of it. My friend Don Tapscott and his son have written a very good book on the blockchain revolution. You might check that out if you want to know more. All right, we're going to take a break. Probably shouldn't have delved into this. It's such a kind of a obscure subject, but I find it fascinating. But maybe you want to just talk about computers or the internet or your smartphone. I'd like to talk about that too. 888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number. Happy Mother's Day. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO. She is Kim Schaffer, our phone lady. That sounds bad.
Phone lady.
One ringy dingy.
We don't even have phone ladies anymore.
We don't have phone ladies. Our operator. Hello, Operator 7. How are you?
You don't even have to dial a phone anymore.
I know. Well, do kids even know what that means? We say dial.
They call so-and-so.
But do we still tell somebody to dial my number, dial me up? I think we do. It's
do,
like the...
ring?
I have a friend whose daughter saw for the first time a floppy disk, and she looked at it and she said, oh, the save icon. That's how she knew it,
yeah,
right?
That's what it is.
And if you look on your smartphone, if you look at the phone application, it's usually a handset. Like, this doesn't look like a handset. I don't understand.
It's a flat.
It's a slab of glass.
Yeah.
That's it. This is, by the way, we talked yesterday. You're an HTC. You like the HTC One. This is the HTC 10.
I liked it. I don't use it anymore.
It's nice. It's nice. It's okay.
I won't be getting rid of the iPhone anytime soon.
Yeah. If you like iPhones, you should stick with iPhones. I personally kind of prefer Android, and I'm using the Galaxy S7. And I think I'm going to it was a tough battle. This is a serious contender, the HTC 10, but I think the S7 wins by a TKO.
I think that's more attractive, though.
It is. It's nicer.
Yeah.
And the problem with the Galaxy S7, although it's beautiful, is it's glass and it's slippery. And so you really need to put it in a case, so it doesn't really matter how attractive it is. This is metal, the
right.
HTC, and it's probably fairly tough, although you wouldn't want to drop this either.
No, I mean, it does get gymmed up. I've done it.
Yeah, it'll get dinged.
It gets the dings. I don't like the dings.
It's an okay phone. It's okay. It's not going to beat the S7. S7 has better battery life, somewhat better camera. It's a little snappier feeling, too, and I think that's because it has much faster storage memory. I don't know. Anyway, none of that.
Well, we're gonna continue to talk about phones.
None of that. Are we? Who should we talk to?
Gordon has a problem with his Samsung phone and
okay.
wants to know if you have any suggestions.
I like Sammy's.
Yep.
I think that's really who, you know, really, if you're an HTC person or a Samsung person, that would decide which one you, if you like HTC, you should get the 10, it's fine. If you like Samsung, you get Samsung. I think Gordon might not be buying any more Samsungs. We'll see. Hi, Gordon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo. Long time listener, first time caller.
Nice to hear from you. Thanks.
I got a question for you. About a year and a half ago, my S4 went, you know, all out on me and died.
Yes. As they do.
Right. So I bought the S5 right when it came out. And now, a year and a half later, the battery is lousy, and it's completely cluttered. I'm erasing all of my media, I would say, probably once or twice a week.
Wow.
I have no storage space, and my phone, shall I say, dial-up was faster when I was a kid.
Have you tried resetting the phone, you know, going into the backup and reset settings,
and
do the factory reset. Have you tried that?
I have, not recently, but I have, and I try to avoid that just because of the inconvenience.
Yeah, it's very inconvenient.
Google, but
on the other hand, it might be the solution, as with any computer. I mean, nowadays, these phones really are just computers, like your desktop or your laptop. And, of course, when your desktop gets slow, what do we say? Well, reformat and reinstall, you know, and don't install all that old stuff. You know, take it as a spring cleaning. And that's somewhat true of the phone. Has Samsung been pushing updates to the phone? Are you getting more recent versions of Android yet still? Or?
So I have, what's the latest one? Lollipop?
Lollipop. You're up to 5.
Yes. Yeah, my brother, who has the LG V10, beautiful
He's on
phone.
6. Yeah, that's a nice phone.
Yeah.
He's on 6.
He's trying to put He tried pushing it onto me, but honestly, I like my S5 better.
Yeah. Well, I would look at the S7. I mean, if you're willing, is it time to upgrade? It's been a couple of years.
Well, I have T-Mobile, so there is no upgrade anymore.
Yeah, no, they're never. Well, it, you know, it was all a shell game anyway. You end up paying for it. They just built
obviously.
It.
Obviously, my dad was actually. My dad used to own a cell phone store in
he knows. The Valley. For, he knows. You know.
Like 21 years.
Yeah. You pay for it one way or the other. And all these phones are pretty expensive. The S7, the only advantage in the S7 is they've been doing a lot of discounting and deals, like buy two, get the second one for 50% off and something like that. But
they are expensive. Maybe there's a different phone out there for me that might work better even. Here's basically where I come from. I need to have a replaceable battery and expandable storage.
Then you definitely want the G5, the LG G5. If you like your brother's V10, the G5 is the latest LG with a removable battery and expandable storage. Samsung stopped doing that.
With the S6, I believe.
The S6. I think the new S7, has expandable storage, but it still doesn't have a removable battery. Now, I have to say, the S7's battery life is really good.
When I first bought my S5 on a heavy, heavy day, the battery would last me from, 6:30 in the morning when I would take it off the charger, you know, get ready to go to work or school or whatever. It would last me until I would say 7, 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah, I don't think that's adequate.
Now I'm carrying around, a portable power bank. I'm carrying around 3 extra batteries.
It's expensive, but the S5 was a failure. I rejected it. I reviewed it, and I said, it's not good enough. The battery life's not good enough, and if it's getting worse, that's bad. It had a lot of hesitation issues. I think Samsung's S6 even, while it was a much better phone than the S5, left something to be desired. And I think they've smoothed out all the seams with the S7. It is right now I keep trying new phones. Just got this HTC 10. S7 is the best Android phone out there right now, period. But you're running up against something that I think is unfortunate, and I do think is starting to be the case, which is manufacturers don't expect you to own a phone longer than 2 years. These are $600 and $700 devices that are obsolete in 2 years. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with them. It's kind of artificial obsolescence, frankly. That kind of makes me sad. These phones don't wear out. They're solid state. They don't wear out. They could go for decades, really. The problem is the operating systems get updated, the software gets updated, and pretty soon they're just not keeping up. Battery, I think a replaceable battery would make a big difference because they do wear out. And, typically about 500 charge cycles. So that's about 2 years before the battery just says, I'm not going to take any. I'm not going to take this abuse anymore. I'm staying low and you can't charge me no matter what you do. But I do think people should start thinking that the phone hardware is, it's going to be a $30 a month thing. That's the cost of having a smartphone, plus the data and the phone calls. $30 a month for the hardware, just forever, for the rest of your life. I think that's unfortunate. There's nothing wrong with the hardware. It just ages out so quickly now. Very happy with the S7 in every respect. And the battery life is so good, I don't think you need another one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I guess it's software. Yeah, and I know a lot of people hate Samsung, and so this HTC 10 would be a reasonable alternative. So would the LG G5. But I think the Samsung edges them both out slightly. Great camera. Snappy. Best screen of the bunch. Battery life the best of the bunch easily. I'm getting like 22 hours on a charge now on my S7. It's really good.
That's like the most important thing for me.
I think so too. And I'm forcing myself to use this just to get an idea of the battery life. But see, it's...
My big complaint with my HTC One was it had a
this is much better
battery life.
Part of it is Android 6 Marshmallow. Let's see this. The screen is terrible. So on the Samsung, the screen is only 7 or 8% of the total battery life, which is, I think, the secret to that life on the S7. This is already, 42% of the battery has been used by the screen, 25% by the phone radio, and 24% by apps. It does say, it thinks, we'll see, the battery monitor thinks I'm going to get 18 hours. I don't know if that's true. But that may be the case, that this is good enough to get through the day. Just not quite as good as the S7, but still is enough to get through the day. It's a nice phone. You should look at. You can play with it. Well, you like your iPhone. You're going to stick with the iPhone.
Well, I'm not like you. I can't get a new phone every 2 weeks.
I know.
So I am stuck with this one for 2 years.
Yeah.
But the battery life on this thing is
incredible. Excellent. No, that's the best battery life
in the
bunch, actually. The iPhone S6S Plus.
Yeah.
It's definitely the best battery life in the bunch. I agree.
So now your pretty rose gold iPhone's just sitting in a drawer somewhere?
Yeah. Well, it's not sitting in a drawer. It's sitting on my desk. It's charged.
It's so sad.
It's in use. I FaceTimed my mom with it this morning. I know. But, you know, I keep an iPhone and an iPad at all times, and at least one Android phone at all times, because I have to look at all the different software and stuff. But it's not my daily driver. I think this S7 is so much better. I need a better case, though. The case I got is really stupid looking. It's just like rubber. It looks like a Deadpool suit.
Mine's just rubber, but it's got sparkles.
Oh.
It's got bling.
And so it's manual. I usually only carry one phone at a time, but that is why I have a man bag, because I have so many devices. In my man bag, I have an iPad in there. I got everything in here. This thing is loaded. I should show you. I got the USB. I got a pouch just for USB keys. All the USB keys are in here. That's a pouch for USB keys. And then I have headphones, of course, and then this is, what is this? Oh, my new multi-tool. That's a nice thing I'll never use. And then this is another pouch for what is this? Wires. Oh, this is my charger.
Makeup.
I know, it could be, except I'm a boy. You wouldn't know from my
TV.
Man bag. I do have makeup. I have my makeup, but I don't have it in here because I don't need to put it on much. I have my 360-degree camera in here. I have other stuff. Two other pairs of headphones. I don't know why. That's crazy talk. Let's move on to Krista in Santa Barbara. Hi, Krista. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Krista. Happy Mother's Day if you're a mother.
I'm so excited.
Oh,
thank you. I am.
Oh, good. Are you on your way to a brunch?
No, I'm on my way to a soccer game with three boys.
Oh, well, that's part of being a mom. It never stops, does it?
Nope. So I'm so excited to talk to you. I have a question about my photo storage.
Okay.
So I have tons and tons of photos, and I had backed them all up on two external hard drives and then also in the cloud in PictureLife.
Good, 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 good.
Well, It was good.
Uh-oh.
Until one of my external hard drives just stopped connecting to my computer.
Uh-oh.
So then I was like, great, I still have the other external, and I have PictureLife. Well, PictureLife was bought by Stream Nation, and there's all of a sudden all my pictures, everything's gone.
They didn't give you a chance to back them up or anything?
No, and the only place people are talking about it is on Twitter. And PictureLife just randomly keeps sending messages that they're working on it. But if you try and log in, there's nothing there.
Well, so, you still have one copy, right?
Yes. So my question is to you is where should I put them?
Yeah, one copy is not a backup, is it?
No.
So here's my suggestion. There are plenty of services out there that will give you backup. If you're an Amazon Prime member, Amazon offers unlimited free storage of your photos. There's an Amazon Photos app. You can put it on your phone, your tablet, and I think if you have the PC, that there's a desktop uploader. There is definitely one for Google Photos. That's the other one I would recommend. Now, the difference is Amazon will store your originals. Google Photos will store unlimited lower quality copies for free, but I would still use it because of the search capabilities built in. So it indexes all your photos, and you could do things like, I want soccer pictures from our visit to Bentonville, Arkansas. And it will know, and it'll show you those pictures. And so,
and that's with Google?
That's Google Photos, yeah, photos.google.com. Okay. And they have a desktop uploader as well. I would use more than one. I don't think Amazon or Google is going out of business or going to be sold, so I think you're probably good with that for a while.
Okay.
There's used to be, I would recommend Microsoft's OneDrive. They stopped. They've turned off their photo backup capability, so I wouldn't use them anymore. And just get a second hard drive to replace the one that won't mount anymore. And I think you're doing exactly the right thing, and it's a good thing you did because you're down to one copy. Remember, one copy is not a backup. You've heard me say that many times. That's the original. You need to have two copies to have a backup.
Okay, and then my last question for you related to that is, so Stream Nation sent me this weird email that with me inviting me to my own Google Drive. I haven't opened it, but I'm not, because they bought Picture Life, so I'm wondering what that is, if they have my pictures in there, and I can't, every time I try and contact someone, the phone just says, leave your name and we'll call you back.
That sounds like they... they shut down, didn't they? Yeah, March 8th.
Yes.
And you can move any photos and pictures to Picture Life. Photos and videos and should be sticking around, but music and other files would bite the bullet after that. They're starting a new service called Project Noah. And that is... I wouldn't depend on it. Let me put it this way. But I would say that it's possible that they are putting that Google Drive is where they put your stuff. So I would look at it. It's harmless to look at it if it's really at drive.google.com.
Okay.
And if it is, there's good news because that's easily moved to Google Photos.
Okay.
Yeah, and I don't think Google.
I will open
you never know with Google, but you know, I mean, they had Picasa and they just shut that down. But I think that's why you don't rely on any one company to do this any more than you rely on any one hard drive. Amazon is doing it. Flickr is another good one. There are a lot of sources places to put your pictures. Good for you though thank goodness you did the right thing.
You had
multiple copies. All right, have a good game.
Thank you so much, Leo.
Good.
Thank you, Leo.
Good luck. I hope your team wins. Thanks, Krista. When my son was playing lacrosse, I have so many pictures. I call it the lacrosse era because when I go through my pictures, you know, I look at the thumbnails. There's just miles of lacrosse pictures. That's what you do, right? You take pictures of the kids in sports. What you should also do is what I didn't do, which is periodically go through them, pick the best ones, and throw the rest out. It turns out you don't really care about, you know, having 400 pictures of a lacrosse game. You want the one. One would be enough. One great picture, maybe two, would be enough. I'll give another plug to my friend Bill Atkinson's photo card, by the way, if you use an iPhone or an iPad. His opinion is you don't know how long those photos are going to last on a hard drive or in a cloud storage. So he says, your best pictures, make a print them out, put them in a shoebox or whatever. Remember the old days? Because there's a much better chance that your kids, your grandkids, your great-grandkids will see these and flip through them. I mean, what is the chance that they'll go, oh, grandma's cloud storage is still there. Let's see it for pictures. They're not going to. So, you know, it might not be a bad idea to pick one great picture a week, let's say, and make a print of it. And Bill's program's kind of cool because it prints these big. These are one half of a printed page. So what is that? Five by, 8.5 by 11. 5.5 by 4.75 or something. 4.25. They're big. And they're laminated. He prints them on kind of archival paper, and they're laminated. So that these really should last forever. His idea is, well, you put them on the fridge, put them on the mantle, but at some point they go in a box and they stay and they preserve for future generations. I think that's really true. The only things that really last are prints. So his program is called PhotoCard. It's a free program, but if you want to, and then you can mail postcards with it. That's what these prints are. He says, mail them to your kids, your grandkids, your grandma, your mom. And that way, you know, they'll all have these archival copies. Costs about $1.50, including postage. So it's like $1 for the print. That's not bad, I think. So really the best way to archive photos, and of course you're not going to do 10,000 photos. You're going to pare it down to just the just so picture, is to print it, oddly enough. Print it right, anyway, and it should last a long time. 8888 Ask Leo, the number. Marty in Santa Maria is next. Hi, Marty. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Mr. Laporte. Good to talk to you, sir. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
No problem. Sir, I was calling because I had recently got a Amazon, like a Firebox, you know?
Yeah.
One of those boxes. And I bought a remote online, the keypad remote. A buddy of mine told me it works better. It's a RII. I want to say it's called. It's a RE. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. It's Bluetooth, right?
Yeah. So I got it, and it has a dongle. Is it called the thing that goes in the back? Okay. So I got it, and
You may not need it. Which did you buy, the Amazon Fire TV stick? What did you buy?
I got the box.
It's a box, okay.
And so
I think that probably has Bluetooth built in. You may not need that dongle.
Oh, okay. So I could just access the Bluetooth on Amazon.
Yeah, let me check. We have to take a break. Keep listening on the radio, and I'll give you your answer on the air. I'm guessing it probably has Bluetooth built in. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Box. What is it? Amazon Fire box. Let me look up the Amazon Fire box and see. Is that the Fire TV? It must be the Fire TV, right? So the dongle gives it Bluetooth, but I bet you... Well, let's see. Maybe it doesn't. Built for speed, expandable storage, say goodbye to buffering, stunning video, Marvel controls, user-friendly. I wish they had the specs, right? What's in the box? So if it doesn't have a USB port and it doesn't have Bluetooth, then you're not going to be able to use the Re with it. It's Wi-Fi. Yeah, I'm not sure what he's talking about. He said the Fire TV box. So, yeah, it supports Bluetooth. Okay. So, don't use that little thing that you stick in the back there, because you don't need that. That's... Now I have to look up the Re. Oh, hold on. Let's look up the Re. Any normal Bluetooth control, you wouldn't know. You don't have to worry about it. Yeah. If it's Bluetooth, yeah, it's Bluetooth. So you don't need to these Rees are Bluetooth. So I think you don't need to use the dongle it came with. That's for a device that doesn't support Bluetooth. There will be a button somewhere on the Ree that will turn on the Bluetooth. And then you'll pair it using the Bluetooth menu settings on the Amazon. This is actually kind of cool. I should get one of these. Yeah, it's Bluetooth. Bluetooth. So there'd be a button on the back somewhere on the side. You know, an unobtrusive button. Hey, I should mention our sponsor. What am I thinking? Here I am gassing on, and I could be telling you why I will never again lose my keys or my man bag. Because a tracker. Track your belongings using your smartphone with Tracker. Let me show you the tracker, too. This is great. So, I see, I'm clever because I have my keys chained to my bag, and I have the tracker on my keys. So this way, I'm killing two birds with one stone. Pretty clever, eh? Look how small the tracker is now. It's aluminum. It's nice. It's not a rechargeable. It lasts for a year on a little dime-sized battery. And it's so cool. You'll never lose keys, wallets, computers, pets. It'll track them anywhere. You pair this tracker device to your iOS or Android phone. And then they give you adhesive if you want to stick it on something. But I just, like I said, I have it chained to my bag. That way I can't lose it. If I misplace my phone, I press the button on the tracker and the phone rings. If I misplace my keys, I open up my phone and there it's got a map and shows you where the tracker is. This is the Tracker Bravo, anodized aluminum, thin, durable, reliable. You can see I banged it up quite a bit. This thing really lasts. And now here's the other thing that's so cool. Tracker has a crowd GPS network. Now, this device, for battery reasons and size reasons, isn't a GPS. But the beauty of it is your phone has the GPS. And because there's 1.5 million trackers out there, anytime your tracker gets near somebody else's phone, it registers its location and sends you an alert. So if you lose something, the Tracker app records its last known location on a map, and if another Tracker user comes within 100 feet of it, you're going to get a GPS update. This is super cool. No one else can do this. They have the largest network out there. Go to thetracker.com, T-H-E-T-R-A-C-K-R, no E, .com, and use the promo code TECHGUY, 30% off your entire order right now. And see, look down here. Go down and look at the map. This is where there's trackers all over. And if you lose something anywhere near another tracker, it'll update it. TheTracker.com. Use the promo code TECHGUY for 30% off your entire tracker purchase. What a deal. I got to repack. I took everything out. Does your purse get heavier and heavier over time?
Yeah, to the point where I finally have to stop and clean it out.
Yeah, because this is so heavy.
I end up with, like, bottles of water and all kinds of stuff.
Nothing.
There.
I'm not doing that, but I guess I gotta stop carrying. This is a PC I got in my. Got too much stuff in here.
It's the smallest PC I've ever seen.
I know. At least it's a small one. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number to call. So I was just checking the ReTech controller that our caller bought to use with his Fire TV. The ones I see here are keyboards and mouse, and it's kind of cute. And the Fire TV has Bluetooth, and the keyboard has Bluetooth. So what you'll need to do is go into pairing mode on both. On the keyboard, usually there's a button. It'll probably be fairly obscure. They don't want you to hit it by accident, so it might be on the side or the bottom. It often has little radio waves coming off of it. You press that, hold it. There should be a light that goes from solid to blinking. That's the universal sign. There is no standard, but that's the universal sign that the Bluetooth is now in pairing mode. Since the ReTech doesn't have any display on it. You just have to trust the little light. And then you'll probably do the same on the Fire TV's settings. You go into settings. It has Bluetooth also. And you'll say, it might say add a remote. It might say, I have one. I just forgot what the menus look like. But somewhere there'll be a way to either add a remote or add a keyboard or just pair a Bluetooth device. You'll go into the pairing mode. At some point, you know how Bluetooth pairing works. The Fire TV, you say, oh, I see a ReTech keyboard. Would you like to pair with that? And it'll say yes. Now, if it asks for a code, usually on something like that, it's 0000. That's the kind of also the default. I don't have a code. 0040s. But look in the manual on the ReTech and the manual on the Fire TV. pair those together, and at that point, that keyboard should work with the Fire TV, which is kind of cool. 8888-ASK, Leo Allen in Brea, California. Hi, Allen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. Listen to you all the time. Good to get through.
Thank you, Allen.
For that S5, you know, mine did the same thing on my battery, and I just told them my battery was bad, and T-Mobile gave me a new battery.
Oh, they opened it up and put a new one in.
I was on the S5.
Nice.
See, I have a new S7 Edge, and I love it.
Isn't that a great phone?
But I'm having a problem.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If I wasn't already married, I'd marry it.
I feel the same way. My wife calls it my girlfriend. So are you playing with your girlfriend again? Middle of the night. There's a little glowing light coming from my side of the bed. Are you playing with your girlfriend? Yes, I've got the phone. I got to. She misses me.
Yeah. Well, they got their boyfriend. Anyway.
What can I do to help you with it? What's the problem you're having?
Yeah. All right. To get on the internet, I say, okay, Google. And then it'll tell me. And then I'll tell her what I want.
Yeah.
And mine only let me do that once. I try it the second time. I say, okay, Google. Then I get the wavy circles. And I try to tell her what I want over and over again. It won't do anything.
Darn that, Google. Sometimes she just refuses to listen. Yeah, I'm not sure what that... I've not seen that behavior. It's supposed to do whatever you asked it to do, and then... You're in the browser or whatever, you know, you're setting a calendar appointment. And then if you say it again, it should recognize that and open up again. So you see the wavy, which says I'm listening, but it's not hearing.
Yeah.
One thing I would do, and I do this on all Samsung devices, and this could be the problem. Samsung, I don't know why, and I don't like it, bundles their own voice program in too, called S Voice. And I disable it every time. So there's an application in there, and you can if you go to the applications menu, and you get the details on the S Voice. There's a button that says disable. Actually, they've changed it lately to say something else. Like you can't uninstall it. I wish you could, but you can make it so that it's not active. And that's probably going to help because that is not a good thing. That can get confusing between the Google voice recognition and the Samsung voice recognition. And they don't need to put it in. Google's is better. And I doubt anybody wants to use the Samsung version. So that's the first thing I would do. I'm not sure why it would stop recognizing you. But anyway, that's something I would
do. Let me do it the first time. It let me do it the first time, but the second time, that's it.
Huh.
My girlfriend, we got our phones at the same time.
Does hers do that too?
No, hers works fine.
Yeah, turn off the S voice. You know, that's the only thing I can think of. And have you trained it? Did you train it?
No.
Okay, you don't have to. But if you go into the settings of it, you can actually, and it's hard to find. You have to actually go to the Google Voice, the Google settings, and I think it might even be in the keyboard. It's in the keyboard and input section of the settings. And there is a chance to train it to your voice, and that might help also. It makes it a little bit more accurate.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So play with those two things. I love this talking to the phone. I have to admit, I don't do it that often. I forget, you know, it's just as easy to go and open the browser and type in something. And I keep kicking myself going, well, you know, you could talk to this thing. The problem I find is, and this is true of Siri on the iPhone and of Cortana on Windows and the Windows phone. If they work most of the time, but that's not quite enough, right? If it doesn't work some of the time, it's just easier just to do it myself. It's like a teenager. After a while, you stop asking them to take out the trash and you just do it because it's just a pain in the butt. And I think that's what's happening with me and my voice recognition. They're like teenagers. If they only work some of the time, then you end up just kind of, I'm just going to do it. I'll do it myself. Fine. Sit there and play your video games. I'll do it myself. It's probably not good for the teenager, but you could do that to the phone. By the way, the folks that created Siri, Remember, Apple, it was a standalone product that Apple bought. And I think Apple kind of messed up, to be completely blunt. I don't think Siri is as good now on the iPhone as it was before they bought it. So the guys took the money and they went off on their own, and they have a new AI that launches Monday named Viv. Short for Vivian, I don't know. It is a new conversational interface from the folks who did Siri, and I think they were brilliant. They did a very good job. So that will be something to look at and look for. They say they launch on Monday. Viv.ai. And the people who did it, the original Siri developers, say, we think it's better than Siri. I've seen things that maybe are better than Siri. So, for instance, there's SoundHound. The folks that do the SoundHound music recognition, they have a voice recognition called Hound. That's really quite interesting. You can give it, like, compound sentences. I need a hotel in Portland that takes pets and is under $100 for next Friday night. And it will come back. You know, if you haven't downloaded it, you can download a Hound on iOS and Android. And if you haven't tried it, it will answer a query, complex query like that, in seconds. I mean, like, right away. And it makes you realize, geez, why isn't Google Voice or Google Now and Siri and Alexa and Cortana, why aren't they getting better faster? Well, I'll be interested to see it. Maybe it's the up and coming startups. Those are the ones that happen. Next week, Viv the Global Brain radically simplifies the world by providing an intelligent interface to everything. Yeah, see, they're doing the same thing Hound is doing, where they're doing more complex sentences. Find me a flight to Dallas with a seat that Shaq could fit in. Or what's the weather near the Super Bowl? See, Doug Kitlaus, who created Siri, said Siri was the chapter one, and now it's almost like a new internet age is coming in. Viv will be a giant brain in the sky. Oh, we know where that's going. Viv. Am I going to the wrong site, though? See, this site used to look like this. Is it viv.ai or is it something else? There they are, working. They're working. That's Geeks at Work. Dag Kitlaus and company. Where do I find the website, though? I hate it when they have articles about something. I thought it was viv.ai. Maybe I'm wrong. There's Doug. Dag. First public demonstrations Monday. Well, they changed the site. It completely changed how it looks. That's so weird. Now this looks like this. It doesn't say global intelligence or... Huh. This is not as nice a site. That's what's strange. Isn't that weird? Huh. They took a nice site and they made it worse. Very strange. I'm puzzled. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and VR helmets and all that. I got the HTC Vive. I spent some money with HTC this week. I got the HTC 10 phone and then the HTC Vive virtual reality headset. It's part of being a tech guy, unfortunately. Really, I don't. You gotta spend a lot of money on gadgets and gizmos, keep up with all this stuff. But I do think VR is very exciting. I spend a lot of time Well, there's a game on Vive called Job Simulator, and you can have different jobs. So I was a chef, fat cook, short order cook, actually, because they order up and you cook stuff. But mostly you just throw tomatoes and make a mess, and it doesn't matter. It's virtual reality. And because the Vive, so the Oculus Rift, which is, $500, is just a visor. But the Vive... Well, it's a visor, and it comes with a gaming controller, the Rift, and a camera to know where you are in space. But you can't move around too much. You can only kind of, wiggle your body. The Vive comes with paddles, so you now can touch and throw things. Of course, the visor. And then it comes with sensors that give you a space, so you can actually be in a fairly large space and move around. So you can have a thing like a kitchen that you can move around. That means you're going to take over a pretty big chunk of your living room or your den or somewhere. You're going to need somewhere in the basement where there's no obstructions because you don't want to fall over things. But it's pretty kind of cool that you move around and you go over to the stove and you go over to the refrigerator and you can move around in this little space. Very vivid. My wife was using it, and she started playing a game where you're in a dungeon. And a skeleton snuck up behind her with a sword, and she screamed. She jumped like it was real. Like you look over your shoulder, you're, whoa! Because it's vivid. It's real. So, pretty amazing. Just waving to people. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to scare you.
Pretty out the window?
Yeah, I'm waving out the window. It's radio. No one knows I'm doing that. Unless I say something. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. Mark in Silver Lake, California. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Well, Leo, I need to know what you know about this situation. I'm trying to replace my phone, which is a Nexus 5.
Yeah.
Google phone, right? It's supposed to work on all the different carriers. I have it on Sprint.
Okay.
And it's starting to fail. Things are going wrong with it.
Yeah.
Saw a deal on Groupon for the 5X.
Good.
The Nexus 5X, and so receive that. Now, Sprint over the phone and then in a store both tell me that they don't have that phone on their network.
Yeah, just ignore
that. Is that even possible?
Well, it is. So the problem goes back to earlier times when Sprint and Verizon were using a technology for their phone service called CDMA.
Right.
And AT&T and T-Mobile were using GSM. But all four services now have started converting over to LTE. You keep hearing about LTE, LTE. And LTE is not just data. The voice is also carried on LTE. So my guess is if you put a Sprint chip in there, because now because of LTE, even the CDMA carriers, Sprint and Verizon, who didn't used to have SIM cards, you didn't use them. You activated the phone over the network, now have SIM cards. So what I would do... is just don't mention the phone. Say, I need a new SIM card and put it in. Have you already bought the 5X?
I bought the 5X. I received it. And I called Sprint, and Sprint sent me a SIM card for it.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
And it's in the phone now. And then I tried to activate it by calling in to the phone number that they have, and no satisfaction there. So then,
odd, because I'm looking at the Sprint site and it says program your Nexus 5X.
Really?
And it says, oh, we need, if you need a SIM, but of course you knew that you got the SIM,
right?
And they talk about hands-free activation. It may be that you have to do some additional configuration in the 5X by updating the data profile. That's easy to do if that's what you need to do. But it says it works. Did you do the *#*#7276# *#*#?
I don't know what that is.
That's the reset network connection. So I'll tell you what. Here's what you do. Don't call Sprint, because the problem is, you know, some of these reps don't know.
Right.
I mean, she obviously told you the wrong thing. Yes, they work with a 5X. It says so on Sprint's website. So I don't know what your rep was looking at. So search. I just did a quick search for Nexus 5X and Sprint, and I found a page in their support area. It says program your Nexus 5X. So Google only makes, unless they make a Sprint version and a T-Mobile version, but I don't think, that's the other thing. Let me look at the store, the Google store, and see if they have separate versions. Because the other issue that could be is a radio issue. That's nowadays not GSM, CMA, it's all LTE, but the radio frequencies are critical. So I'm gonna go to the Nexus 5X in the store. Do I have to choose? I'm gonna choose a color. I'm gonna choose memory. No, they don't say choose your carrier. So that means it works on all carriers, and even the Sprint page implies that it does. So ignore the person on the phone at Sprint.
Call back and get somebody I can trust.
Yeah, or just go to the Google and Google program your Nexus 5X.
Right, I'll do that
on Sprint. And they give you several steps for activation, and they have some troubleshooting as well. So I think that should be no problem. In fact, I know it works with Sprint. Now, you know how I know? Because you can use it with Google's own carrier, Project Fi,
exactly,
which switches from T-Mobile to Sprint depending on which is better. So I know it works with Sprint.
Right.
In fact, if Sprint doesn't give you satisfaction, switch to Fi. Fi's great. I'll tell you why. Since you know Sprint works where you are, because you've been using Sprint, it'll give you that. So you're going to have the same carriage you have where you are, but you're going to have the additional T-Mobile thing, and it works great with Wi-Fi, too. And it will choose even hands-off. So if you're driving along and suddenly the Sprint signal's not so good, but there's a great T-Mobile signal, it'll just, in the middle of a call, without you not knowing it, it'll hand it over. Plus, they're cheaper than Sprint. They charge $20 out of the box, and that gives you unlimited phone calls in the U.S. and unlimited text messages, and then $10 per gigabyte of data, and they only charge you for what you use. So if you choose a plan, I chose like the 4 gigabytes a month plan. So I pay $40 plus $20, $60 a month. But if I don't use all 4 gigabytes, they don't charge you for that. So you only pay for the data you use. So Fi is really affordable for me. I use it with a 6P. That's the only negative, but you already have the one negative, which is you have to use a Nexus 5X or a Google.
Right.
You have to use a Google phone, and you have it. So yeah. if you can't get it working with Sprint, this might be an opportunity. You can also port your phone number over so you can keep your number.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. They have to do that by law.
I thought I had to get a...
No, they port it over for you.
Oh, good.
Yeah, all carriers do that. They have to. So unless you got a weird international version, the Groupon thing, maybe I don't know.
That's one variable there. I got it from Groupon, not from Google.
Yeah, maybe it's the Canadian version or something.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
You could tell if you look in the settings, there will be specific information about the phone that will indicate what geographic region it's intended for. I think, frankly, it will work. Just if you really just want to get it to work right now, go to that website and follow the steps.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a weird number you have to dial and all that. That resets the activation. Now, thank goodness, it used to be a real problem. I think you can thank Apple a little bit for this, because Apple did not want to sell separate iPhones on the Sprint network and separate iPhones on the T-Mobile network. They wanted to make one iPhone that had all the radios for every network. And I think they really pressured the carriers to do this. And LTE has been a boon. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Yes, Keith, 43. You're looking for a rare earth magnet or neodymium magnet. Those are the strong magnets. Yeah, just as Neomedius says. Rare earth. Ah, that was a good band.
I was going to say, is that the song we're going to hear next?
No, if we're Nathan, maybe, because Nathan picks up. He's looking for any excuse.
What is it? Get ready or here we come? Is that them?
Yeah, I think that sounds right. Let's look on Google Music.
My 10 years at KFRC might have actually helped me.
KFRC. Fashion your KFRC brooch. When you were at KFRC, it wasn't the boss radio anymore, though.
No,
right?
I only started there.
It was an oldies station.
It was oldies.
Yeah.
I started there in 99, so I was not there.
You
for
missed
Dr. Don Rose.
Dr. Donald T. Rose.
Yeah.
Sacher Tomato. Hi, Dr. Don. You know, this is a golden age for radio because you can get air checks for anybody now.
I know. It's awesome.
I know. I used to love listening to air checks.
I got in kind of late this morning.
Oh, so. I'm sorry.
A little bit rainy. So and well, program notes here.
Program's all wet. But
program number 1,124. Can you imagine?
I can't. I don't want to.
This is all the compression they use.
No, they usually sell it by the ton.
So
you know?
My friend George was the engineer.
Dr. Don Rose, plays them for you.
Oh. As a matter of fact, get me out of these wet clothes and into a dry martini. Good grief, it is wet out there this morning. But that's all right. It's nice and dry in here and wherever you are, I hope. We have a leak that just sprang in the over our closet. Fortunately, it's in there instead of over the bed, so...
That's right!
Gotta wait till next summer to worry about it.
That's right, Dr. Don! Good morning. Talk that post right up, baby.
It's a lot.
That's a pro.
People can't do that.
I can do it. I can do it in my head.
You can.
I can totally
like
do it.
You used to do it.
Yeah. Did it for years.
But nobody,
it's me.
It's not a talent that being honed anymore.
Aren't you glad that we don't have to work in a room like that anymore? Although I can still smell the carts.
I don't know what the hell's going on anywhere, but it's organized where it should be. It's organized in my head.
KFRC, just playing those games that people play. In fact, one of my games goes...
What? Yeah, it's called windshield wiper, you know.
The only time I'm ever on is from 6 to 9. I start at 6 a.m. sharp and end at 9 a.m. dull.
Okay, guy, breakfast time! Now, I must preface the feeding of Roscoe. Incidentally, Roscoe, Beverly says this is her favorite time of the day when we feed you breakfast, right?
Well, my day always starts the same way. Painful. Pain, hurt, anguish. The alarm goes off at 4:22 in the morning, and that's the last possible minute for me. It means I got to get right up right now. I cannot stay in bed one more minute. And then after that, I come into work, and I get here at the last possible second. We're violating all the rules already, right?
Look at this playlist. That's what he has to play.
If I'd sit down for 5 minutes, I'd lose whatever momentum I picked up. And the most important set of the morning is really the first set.
So anyway, it's in little pieces. You don't have to worry, Roscoe. You just kind of chowed out. Okay,
look at he's got those horns.
There's his crutches.
Yeah, because he was missing a leg.
Deference, in deference to Beverly, we'll have a moment here. Just
that's right, Dr. Dad.
I want to put it down here so we can catch Roscoe eating here. Okay, all right.
Used to have that. Used to work with those microphones. They're very hard to work with. Very unresponsive. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. On we go to Audrey in Los Angeles. Hi, Audrey.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm okay, Leo. How are you?
Really good.
So, I love your show.
Happy Mother's Day, if you're a mother.
Oh, I am. Thank you. And I always feel like I learned something, but I'm still stuck in the dark ages with technology. And I have a computer that has outlived the company. I have a desktop HP.
Okay.
From 2009.
Oh, wow.
And I love this computer. It does everything I need. I love it.
Sure you do. Oldie but goodie. Was it running Windows?
7. Home
7. Team. Okay. That was a nice version of Windows, I thought.
Yeah. I just gave you the news from yesterday.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so we had a power outage last night, and this morning when I tried to turn on my computer, dead, just dead. Now it's plugged into a surge protector, so I thought that if there's a power outage, this kind of stuff is not supposed to happen.
Well, you probably, although even a good surge protector won't protect against a big surge. But that's so. There's a couple of things that can happen. The real issue is the power went out. And the computer, if it was in the middle of something, might have not broken the computer, but messed up the hard drive. So that's one possibility. Are you saying, though, it won't turn on at all? Like it won't, like you press the button and nothing happens? You don't hear
nothing,
sound?
Nothing. No pulse, nothing.
No fan, nothing.
Nothing. Dead.
Well, it is also possible that when the power comes back on, that's when you get the surge. and because there's a rush of power all of a sudden. And sometimes it'll jump across a surge protector. Really, if I think of surge protectors as much as insurance as anything else, because they have often insurance policies on them. There's only really one good way to protect equipment on power is to get a UPS. And there are even UPSs that won't protect you. You need to get a certain kind of uninterruptible power supply. They have batteries. They condition the power. But see, a brownout or a power sag or a loss of power briefly can still damage the computer. And a surge protector is only protecting against, you know, a surge in power. A UPS, because it has a battery, protects against a lot more stuff.
What can I do for my computer now?
Well, I don't know what's wrong. It sounds like you could just replace the power supply and it would be all right.
Oh.
So those are a fairly inexpensive part to fix. It's a case. It's a tower. It's on the desk, right? It's not a laptop.
Correct.
Yeah. You know, it's like a $50 part at most. And it's just a few screws to remove. If you're pretty handy, you can order a replacement power supply. Be careful. Don't open up the power supply itself. It's a closed-in case. And there are things that could shock you, capacitors in there that could shock you. But the power supply itself is safe to remove. And just don't open it. Just take it out of the case and put a new one in and plug everything back in again. Any good computer tech could do that.
Okay.
And I think that that's probably what's wrong. The fact that you press the switch. What you want to do, though, is, you know, you don't go to the doctor and say, here's what's wrong, fix it. You go to the doctor and say, what's wrong? So ask the tech, you know, tell him what you told me. I bet you he's going to come down to the power supply, but it could be something simpler. And I don't want to precondition him to say, oh, yeah, we're going to have to replace everything. Don't let him replace more than the power supply, though. At this point, it's so old that if it's a motherboard, or you don't want to spend hundreds of dollars getting this thing back.
All right.
I know you love it.
Yes.
But really, it's 7 years old, and, you know, it wouldn't, you could, for hundreds of dollars, you get a brand new computer, right?
Yes.
So there's a point beyond which it's not worth repairing.
All right. So I'll take it in, and I will...
And bring the power strip with you, because... Oh, I know. Oh, dummy. Duh. Okay, I just thought of one thing. Did you try taking the power strip out of the wall and just plugging into the wall just to make sure? Because power strips have fuses in them.
I did.
Oh, good. Okay.
Everything else on the surge protector is working just fine.
Oh, all right.
I did plug my computer into the wall. I plugged it into the socket that the surge protector had
good.
Been on okay. when I knew it was working.
Okay.
So
thank goodness. Yeah, I forgot to mention that surge protectors have a fuse. And if there is a surge, it'll trip the fuse and the protector will stop working. But you've got other stuff plugged into it and you plugged it into the wall without the surge protector. And in both cases, nothing. There's no fan. You don't see the fan turning or anything.
It's like there's not even any machinery in there.
Night of the living dead computer.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the power supply. That's
good.
The power supply. Yeah. Make sure that, you know, everything's plugged in right and, you know, the cord didn't slip out or everything. But if everything looks normal and it's really plugged in the computer right and you press the button and nothing, you don't even get like a little jump of the fan or anything, that's the power supply. And that's
it's not even trying.
That's an easy thing to fix.
Good.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
Whew. Thank goodness. Yeah, that's power supplies are fairly fragile. They go. So the first thing always, I just tell you, let me just tell you. On a computer, the first thing to die is almost always the hard drive, the moving part, right? The thing that spins. It's one reason I'm excited and happy about SSDs, the solid state drives replacing the spinning drives, because they don't wear out as fast and they're faster, they're more reliable. But the first thing to die is going to be the spinning drive, the old hard drive. But they manifest itself in weird ways, like the computer seems slow, could be a symptom of a bad hard drive. Or programs crash, or you get blue screens. Your operating system crashes a lot. You start to think, well, that must be the operating system, or that must be that program. It could just be the hard drive, and that really is, because it's the moving part, the first thing to go. But the next thing to go is the power supply, and there's a lot of stress on a power supply, and I think that's why they just wear out sometimes. Fortunately, both are fairly inexpensive and easy to replace. Now, if you want to really protect yourself against bad power situations, you actually have to spend a lot more than you think. Those little surge protectors you buy at the hardware store, I use them too. I use them mostly as power strips. I don't expect them to protect much. I remember talking to the co-author of my first book, Gina Smith. We were working on a book together. This was some years ago. And She said, oh. And I heard a boom. I said, what happened? She said, I think lightning hit the house. I said, oh, my. Well, I'm, you know. She said, it's okay. I have a surge protector. And then nothing would work. Not even the computers wouldn't work, but the refrigerator, the stove, everything. Because even if you have good surge suppression, a giant lightning surge like that, a lot of volts will jump across. It'll arc. It'll fry anything. She had to get all new home appliances as well as new computers. So often I think when you look at a surge protector, what you're really looking at is the insurance policy. We'll pay you $1 million. And that might be the thing you're really buying. If you want real line condition, well, first thing to do, the best way to do surge suppression is to get whole house surge suppression. And if you ask your electrician, that's not horribly expensive. It's cheaper than buying a surge suppressor for everything. And it'll protect the whole house. And that's not a bad idea, as long as you understand the limits of it. And then if you really have sensitive equipment or expensive equipment, maybe your HDTV is the most expensive thing in your house, then you want to look at something that does line conditioning, power conditioning, not just surges, but brownouts, sags. And usually that involves a battery and some pretty sophisticated circuitry because it has to respond very quickly to these changes in power. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Have you heard about Tunnel Bear? Hey, da 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 da. You know when? What was it that was? Everybody was using Tunnel Bear for something. Was it the BBC iPlayer? There was something going on. Everybody wanted to see. Maybe it was Downton Abbey, but it was like everybody said, "Oh yeah, just use Tunnel Bear, no problem." Tunnel Bear is the simple way to do VPN. It's a privacy app, provides you with a secure and private connection. And a more open internet. You could bypass all of the annoying details that typically come with a VPN for personal use. There's no messing with port configurations or DNS or router settings. Tunnel Bear just works. That's why people love Tunnel Bear. It's easy to use. You can literally choose the country that you want to be emerging onto the net from, that you'll appear to be from, in the app. You could turn Tunnel Bear on and watch as your bear tunnels your internet connection to your new location, and all of a sudden you're in Singapore or the UK or wherever you want to be, anywhere in the world. One of the things I really like about Tunnel Bear, they offer a free account with 500 megabytes of data every month. Now, that's not a huge amount, but it's enough for casual VPN use. You know, if you don't need a full-time VPN, you don't use open Wi-Fi, this is actually something you should jot down just the next time you're at a coffee shop or a hotel and you want to use their access point, set up Tunnel Bear now and you'll be ready. 500 megabytes of data free every month and no credit card required. But if you want to do more than that, they've got great plans too. With Tunnel Bear, your connection is secured, of course, with 256-bit AES encryption. The best. You can bypass geo-blocking. You can hide your location. Your online activity is shielded from prying eyes, including third parties, hackers, local networks. And if you're using Tunnel Bear at home, your ISP. And a lot of ISPs spy on you. Download a Tunnel Bear right now. Top-rated privacy policy, and I know you want to know this, they do not log user activity. That's a must. They do not log user activity. Tunnel to 20 different countries. Use the internet as if you're in those countries. Protect your privacy. Secure your connection. Try tunnelbear.com/techguy. Try tunnelbear.com/techguy. Everybody loves Tunnel Bear because it's so easy to use. Download your Tunnel Bear. Get your bear today. Try TRYTUNNELBEAR. It's like a bear, a little cuddly little bear that roars, protecting you in your little cave. Try tunnelbear.com/techguy. Set up the free account today. You're going to love it. No credit card needed. Tunnel Bear. UK, US, Canada, Germany, Japan, France, Italy, Netherlands, Sweden, Switzerland, Ireland, Spain, Australia, and Singapore. Nice. Nice. I checked out Tunnel Bear because of the chat room. Chat room told me about Tunnel Bear, actually. I said, these guys are good. Monday, triangulation. Fake Steve Jobs, Dan Lyons will be our guest. And his new book, Disrupted, is the story of his middle-aged quest to find satisfaction working at a crazy startup called HubSpot in Boston. And this book was so, HubSpot was so worried, they did all sorts of nefarious things to try to get the manuscript before it was published. They were very worried. It's a good story. And then today on Twit, oh, it's going to be fun. Jason Snell, Kurt Wagner from Recode, he's the senior editor there, and Luria Petrucci, Callie Lewis. Luria would be our third. That'll be fun. Good lineup. I will listen to Fresh Air's interview with Dan. Was it good? I bet it was good. I ended up talking like Dr. Don for a minute there. That's right, Dr. Don. I need a cart machine.
Those were just being phased out when I got into radio.
What?
Yep. So I learned on them, but we already had the audio vault. When I was working at
I never worked with computers.
Yeah, I ever. Only worked with computers. Yeah. I got the easy way out. I mean, I used reel-to-reel on one of our AMs playing back G. Gordon Liddy. But
wow.
I didn't have to do all the splicing and all the hard
stuff. Oh, man, I spliced. I was a production director with Ampex 351s, and if you wanted to speed it up or slow it down, you'd put tape on the capstan and... Oh, all sorts of tricks. That was fun. Phasing it. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I feel like I missed out, kind of. Because those were actually
those
skills.
Were really fun days. Those were really fun.
These are the bright, exciting sounds of tomorrow. Now I'm on the Radio 61.
That was the 60s. And this.
K-F-R-C. We still played those when I was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This they kept this package.
K-F-R-C. Until some idiot consultant came and made us get rid of them.
There was always the story that if you.
K-F-R-C.
Once they made a jingle package for you, that you'd be fired for sure.
Oh, yeah. They spent all that money on it.
Right. That was the sign.
And now.
Leo report. KFR. See, I had a jingle package for me. I wonder where it is.
For which station? KNBR?
Oh, I can't remember. Ages ago. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And as you can tell from the magic music, it's time for our photo guy. Chris Marquardt is here. He is a photographer, professional photographer, but also a great educator. A teacher. His workshops are available at discoverthetopfloor.com, and he's been teaching us to take better pictures. How long have we been doing this? For some time now.
Oh, I think since 2006.
Wow.
Sometime around 2006 or 7, I think we started. So it's about 10 years. We should have cake and streamers and things, yeah.
Well, it's you're really great for me. I love talking about photography. But you've also been a great inspiration for me to go out there, take more pictures.
Well, and I'm grateful you have me on the show.
Yay. Well, today we're going to talk about something you got me into and I'm mad at you for, film photography. Because now it wasn't just you. A lot of people who are great digital photographers, as are you, started as I did in days gone by with film. I used to, roll my own black and white film into little canisters, in a bag, and cut and print it myself, develop it myself in the chemicals, and then print it with a big enlarger. And I used to love doing that, but I have to say it was a lot of work. And I've really embraced digital photography since I started about 2000. I was slow to go to digital, but
don't you,
2004.
Don't you have the feeling? Don't you have the feeling that the value's kind of getting lost in photography?
It's too easy, dang it.
You're not putting the work in anymore.
No, that's really true. It is awfully easy. And I have to say, in the earliest days of digital photography with my first camera was 3 megapixels. It really didn't match the quality of film. But nowadays,
oh, yeah.
It's pretty
while,
good.
Yeah.
It's close, right?
Oh, it is close. In some respects, it's better. I will use digital photography for certain things that I would never use analog photography for, and vice versa.
So why shoot film? What's the case? What's the case for film?
Well, okay. Let me give you one really compelling reason. I mean, no one has to shoot film. It's totally fine to use your smartphone, use your DSLR. I do that too. But you know, here's one reason. We have learned to delay decisions when we shoot digital. So like in you shoot raw and then you can change the colors all the way you want. You don't have to make a decision up front. So you delay it till later. With the exposure, you have lots of leeway to play with exposure sliders in your software when you shoot raw. So you delay that decision till later. The framing, you have like so many millions of pixels that, oh yeah, sure, I can crop and fix it in post. And the timing, you shoot like 10 frames per second, you shoot a burst and then you end up with lots of stuff to choose from so you can get the timing right and you don't really have to put the effort in and you will have to work all that later. I mean, these are all decisions that now we can delay and many people do. And you end up amassing this huge mountain of stuff in the back of that process, you know? So you come home and you have thousands of pictures to go through. And one thing that film taught me is that, you know, it's just worth learning and it kind of forces you to learn and then you get better and the pictures come out of the camera right the way you want them because you put the work in. And then you take that, what you learned, back into your digital photography. So it's an amazing learning tool. It's a real good tool to kind of to force yourself, you know? It forces yourself to...
You have to plan more. You have to... I had to use light meter and think about it. And even then, you don't know. And for weeks, if the photo came out, it's...
But you know, times have changed. I mean, nowadays, the film photography has changed. I mean, when you go and pick up a book about film photography, that's probably 20, 30 years old. And we now have smartphones, so we can use a smartphone to as a light meter. You don't have to have a light meter. It's in the smartphone. It's just an app now.
But nobody's writing new books on film photography, right?
Well, we did. We just did. The Film Photography Handbook is actually out right now. It just came out. We've written it for the German market, and then we got interest from Rocky Nook, a publisher in the U.S., and they said, let's translate it. Let's bring it to the United States. So it's out there.
So what's in this book? I mean, what am I going to learn?
We updated it to 2016. I mean, again, we use smartphones. We have the internet. There are so many resources out there and tutorials and there's film timer apps that you can use to develop your film. There are databases on how to develop the film, what developer use with which film. It's really easy now, but people really don't. No one has pulled it together, so that's what we've done. And we do digital image processing. When the moment we have our pictures developed, a lot of people want to scan them in and then put them in Lightroom and then develop them on their computer. And continue. We call that the hybrid process. So this book is really for everyone who is curious about shooting film. And we've written it for total newbies who have never done film. We've also written it for those who want to get back into film, who are kind of curious why so many people are trying to come back into film. So it points out the difference between film and digital and what cameras are out there and what film formats are out there. Like there's medium format and 35 millimeters and large format. It has tips on buying a camera because you get a lot of great cameras on the used market these days. It shows you how to shoot with film. It has a good overview on film types, what's actually available, what can you buy in black and white, in color, instant film, and so on.
This is great. I mean, I need this because I have these cameras, and it's fun aesthetically. I mean, they're beautiful machined pieces of equipment.
Oh, fine mechanics. Yeah. The best fine mechanics in some of these cameras. I mean, some of those are like 80, 90 years old, and they work like clockwork.
The two cameras I have are my age. They're both almost 60 years old. I have the Rolleiflex, Flex, and which is just kind of something I've always wanted because it's beautiful. And then I have a Leica M3, which is widely considered the greatest film camera ever made. And so I splurged. But it's such a process that I end up reaching for my digital camera more often than not. But now I want to read the book because I do want to be a better photographer.
Well, and you learn how to develop film yourself. You learn how to scan film yourself.
That's going too far. I'm not doing that.
let's see. Let's talk again in a few weeks.
I do right now. What I do is I send it off. There's still film processors. In fact, our local camera store in town does film processing, believe it or not, developing and printing. And I love this. They'll give you a CD with all the images on it. So, you get the scanned image as well. And I asked him, I said, well, can I just get the scanned image? He said, you know what? The machine that we do use to process the film automatically digitizes it. You might as well get both. Okay.
Sure.
Why not?
And that's perfectly fine. But, you know, some people are a bit more curious and want to go a bit deeper. And the book kind of covers everything, including how to handle that with the lab and how to handle it yourself. There's an amazing creative potential in doing your own black and white development. So I wouldn't rule it out now.
Oh, you are the devil incarnate, Chris. I'll tell you. Well, if you're taking pictures, don't forget next week Chris is going to review the pictures of dirt that we've been taking. It's not too late to submit a picture of dirt. If you take a great image, and it should be a new image, go to Flickr.com and upload it to the Tech Guy group. Renee Silverman, our moderator, will thank you, welcome you. Make sure you tag it with the word dirt. And then I guess, Chris, your job begins, because you're going to have to pick three images to review for next week.
Well, and first I have to pick 10 winners, because we're giving away 10 books. So tell us about that.
How do you do that?
TheFilmPhotographyHandbook.com. That's where you can put your name for a drawing, and we are going to select five hardcovers and five ebooks.
Midnight tonight, though, is the deadline. So quick, get over there. Yep. TheFilmPhotographyHandbook.com. And get yourself a free one if you can, but if not, it sounds like something I'm going to have to buy, because you know what? You talked me into this thing. What's one more book? Chris Marquardt. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com, or don't forget TheFilmPhotographyHandbook.com. Thanks, Chris. We'll see you next week. Well, that worked quite well. Oh, I do.
You looked exactly the same, too.
I know. It's so weird.
It's so crazy.
That's really bad. I can't believe I'm wearing the same exact outfit.
KFRC, the Box Tops from 1968 at song number 368, counting down the all-time top 610 songs, celebrating KFRC's 20th anniversary.
Oh, my God.
Candy Chamberlain just about ready to head on out the door. Bobby Dale's coming up next. It's 9:49.
Our competition sounded sincere.
Use Benzoyl peroxide and your face will
Candy Chamberlain.
They tried.
Sound like Benzoyl
peroxide will save you.
Is it? Did she call herself Candy Chamberlain?
No, she said Candy Chamberlain's up next.
Oh, up next. Oh, okay.
So she was finishing her shift.
And Clarice Hill Cream. Yeah,
I know Sue well. Cleanses.
Yeah. Then the medicine stays She's around slow around, right?
Yeah, she pimples. Does traffic on ABC 7 here God. In the San Francisco Bay Area in the mornings. And she also works at Coit, I believe.
She has a very nice voice.
Yes.
This was the great KGB. Was the original, I think, Boss Radio. Oh, I thought it was going to be a soundtrack. Oh, Ben Fong Torres wrote a book on Boss Radio. I have to read that.
Yeah, I have it.
The hits keep on coming.
Yep. Him and Bobby Ocean did a talk at a bookstore when he first wrote it.
Oh, I know what I was going to play. Some more KFRC jingles.
KFRC.
And that's weird. These are Drake. I don't like Drake.
What were the ones that you were playing before? Are those also Drake?
Yeah. This is Pam's, which is Pam's is out of Texas. They're a little. I like their stuff a little better.
Chuck Buell. Chuck Buell. Dave Sholin.
Dave Sholin.
The Great American Dream. KFRC.
We had Pam's jingles. Oh. Stereo. Magic 61. That's about your era, right?
No.
No, that's before you.
I was 99.7.
I want to sing your song.
Okay, that's enough of that.
Bringing me back, though.
That's the U collection. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number. Donovan from Rancho Cucamonga, California. You're our next caller. Hi, Donovan. Have I pressed all the buttons correctly? It's quite quiet in Donovan's world. I'll tell you what. I'm going to... I don't know how to do this. Which...
Oh, I'm here.
Hi, Donovan. Oh, hey, thank goodness. I almost muted you.
Pleasure to be on the phone with you.
Thank you, Donovan.
I'm
welcome.
Always listening to you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. What can I do for you?
Okay. I recently received an iMac 2006 from my uncle.
Okay.
I went ahead and upgraded the memory, added 4 gigs to it.
Good.
I haven't done any processor or anything like that, but I took it to the Apple store and they upgraded the operating system.
How far were they able to get? Was it Snow Leopard or...
It was Snow Leopard when I received it. They upgraded to Lion.
Oh, good.
8.7.
That's probably the latest version you could use on that.
Yeah, so I was trying to get it to mirror my MacBook Pro that I have, mm-hmm. so I could somewhat not pull my MacBook out. And
yeah, because this is the one with the screen. It's an all-in-one white screen.
Yes.
Yeah. It was one of the early kind of all-in-one iMacs, actually.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I like it, but I wanted to know, could I upgrade it to El Capitan?
Well, I'm thinking that you can't because that's what the Apple Store put on. I'm sure they wanted to put on the latest version that they could. Let me go to, there's a great website called Every Mac, everymac.com, that tells you, you go spec by spec, you can look for the Mac that you've got, and it'll tell you everything about it, not only what's in it, but what the most recent version of the operating system you can support in everything is. So
yeah,
let's look at
2006. The reason why I wanted to do it is because my MacBook, I have certain programs that I'm so comfortable with using, and on the iMac, I can't.
Yeah.
Use certain programs because
it's, yeah, it's just a little too old. Yeah. It's a Core 2 Duo.
Yes.
And let's see if I can find the latest operating system you're able to use on that. I would guess because the Apple Store got it up to Lion that's probably as far as.
Yeah. Recently took it up there.
They're going to put the most recent version they can on there. Using a laptop to drive that screen, that's an interesting idea. I don't think there's any way to do that.
Okay.
Because I don't think there's any input for that screen. You'd have to get inside the box to do that. I mean, there are ways to do it in software. For instance... But it's not going to solve your problem because you'd still be running the software in the 2006 Mac. So you can use remote access, and then the 2006 Mac is just a window onto your laptop. There are ways to do that with VNC, and there are a lot of different VNC clients for Macintosh. That might be one way to do it. There used to be one called Chicken of the VNC. I don't know if they still make that one. but there are, if you look for it, yeah, they still make it. If you look for VNC, you'll want to find, you need the client and you need the server. One computer controls another one. Yeah. That's probably the only way you can get your laptop's screen onto the Mac, the iMac.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
All right. Yeah, I'm afraid that's kind of... It was a nice gift.
Definitely, I like it. I actually put Pro Tools on it.
Oh, good.
I'm running Pro Tools on it.
Oh, well, you can use it to record then.
Yeah.
Nice. That's fine.
It eliminates me from using my MacBook Pro.
There you go.
For doing it.
You probably can't do a whole lot of tracks, but you probably could do four or six, maybe even eight. That's great.
Well, the most I saw could do up to 16 tracks on it.
It just might get...
It
might bog down.
Major with it.
Yeah.
And see what kind of wise.
So you make your own music?
A little bit.
Nice. That's fun. Do you do loops and stuff, or are you doing, you playing instruments into it, or how are you doing that?
Just basically learning how to edit and get more familiarized with it. I'm actually going to school for audio production.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you know,
get my feet wet.
Everybody uses Pro Tools, so that's the program to learn, and it's not easy. If you can use Pro Tools, you'll be able to get a job as sound engineer pretty quick, I think.
I know, and that's my goal.
Good for you. Hey, great to talk to you. Nice to hear from you. Keep in touch, Donovan. Problem. All right, take care. Bye. Lane in Signal Hill, California. You're next. Hi, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Lane.
Yes. I wanted to rave about my S7.
Isn't it? You know what? We're all in agreement now, I think.
You know, I had an S6 before. I bought it for the low light picture capability, only I use video only.
Ah.
And the thing that the camera reviewers never tell me is how long they'll video before shutting off.
Oh.
Well, and so the S6. Shuts off at when you reach the 4 gigabyte limit.
That makes sense. That's a file system probably can't handle more than 4 gigabyte files.
Yeah, 33 minutes and 10 seconds.
Okay.
But the S7 doesn't shut off. It just starts another file.
That's how it should be.
Yes.
Awesome.
So finally, so I stick up, I'm a social dancer. But I'm busy dancing, so I never get to see what's going on.
So you tape yourself dancing?
I do. I'm kind of a peeping Tom, I guess. I use a Joby magnetic camera tripod.
Those are great. Love the Joby tripods. Yep.
I stick it to the ceiling or some place that I can find. Actually, the speaker is the best thing to stick it on because then you don't get anybody else's peanut gallery comments.
Oh, yeah. You only hear the music. You don't hear them. Oh, my God. Can you believe that dress she's wearing? That's just awful. You don't want to hear that. No. Oh, that's great. You know, what kind of dancing? Right. Social dancing? Do you do the foxtrot, the rumba, West Coast swing? West Coast swing. That's the real deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but anyway, it, you know, with the, like I have, what do I have? 125 gigabytes.
You got the biggest memory, 128 gig memory. Yeah.
No, you can buy 225.
Oh, I see. Right. It came with. I remember now. It's 32 gigs internal, and then you can add an SD card. I read. That's right.
Right. Yep. And so, the 225. I thought, well, I'll buy the biggest since I'm doing every 30 minutes. You chew up 4 gigabytes.
Right.
But I noticed that that was like $150. But for $100, I could buy two 125 gigabyte cards, and I just swap them in and out.
And that's probably plenty. Good. Yeah, I'm sure that's plenty. Love this phone. We're talking about the Galaxy S7, the latest Samsung phone, and everybody I've talked to says this is the greatest phone ever. And you found one more reason to like it. It's a great video camera, and it can tape kind of indefinitely. I keep saying tape as if there's some tape involved. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know, they don't ever talk about that, but that's a really an interesting spec. That's good to know. Do you know? Are you doing 1080p video? You're not doing 4K video.
Yes.
1080p.
Just 1080p.
That's plenty good enough.
And this is it, basically nightclub lighting. You know.
Oh, so it's
and
dark. So,
but I can still see what's going on.
Yeah.
It's too good.
It's a remarkable camera, I have to say.
The video quality, some professional might be able to tell the difference because, you know, I put it on a big screen and the S7's slightly brighter because it's got a 1.7 lens versus the 2.0.
Right.
But now I can walk by a power outlet without flinching.
Hallelujah. You know? Hallelujah. That was the biggest thing.
And about the cracking and the, what I do with my phone, since I'm going to keep this one, I put basically bathroom caulking GE silicon on the edges and on the back so it doesn't slip out of my pocket or out of my hand.
It must look awful.
Well, yeah. And I don't want anybody to steal it. So
no one's going to steal that phone.
Yes. And I've actually had to sand the edges with plumber's crocus cloth to get the RTV because it's so slick.
I agree. And, you know, it is... It's a shame because it's just by itself really cool. I got the Edge. You get to the Edge version?
No.
No, the Edge is even slipperier because there's nothing on it. Yeah. And it's gorgeous, but you immediately have to put it in a case because otherwise you'll drop it. It will shatter. That thing is very fragile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I appreciate the call. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to say hello to everybody out there on the fruited plain, as Rush Limbaugh will say, who's using technology, computers or the internet, or I'd love to talk to you, help you out with it. Smartphones, smart watches. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you want to ask a question, make a comment, or make a suggestion, let's go to Huntington Beach. Frank is on the line. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Leo. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you for calling.
I have just was forced. I mean, I have a Frontier. And
what's Frontier? Frontier is your cable company.
Yes.
Oh, Lord.
Verizon. Sold the Frontier.
Oh, dear.
The Frontier is a mess.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Big mess.
What? This is Huntington Beach? You've got Frontier as your cable company?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Anyway, Leo.
California lawmaker. This is from 2 days ago. The Ventura County Star. California lawmaker sets hearing on Frontier Communications as outages go on. Great.
Ooh.
Yeah. Frontier took over for Verizon in a lot of Southern California, and it has not been a happy transition at all. I'm so sorry.
Oh. Anyway, I spent hours talking to people who don't know what they're doing.
You know, customers, since April 1st, this is again from the Orange County Star, since April 1st, customers have experienced severe telephone, internet, and cable outages.
Oh, really?
Including reports of residents unable to call 911, home security alarms not working, in Oxnard, city council meetings that couldn't be streamed live. Well, that's not so bad. But that's not good. Frontier is based in Connecticut. And they have taken over. It was a $10.5 billion deal. They've taken over Fios in California, Texas, and Florida. You went from one of the best internet systems out there, Verizon's Fios. Did you have fiber?
Yes, fiber right up to the house, the whole community.
You went from one of the best to apparently one of the worst. Now, what I'm hoping is this is just a transitional thing. You know, they're changing systems and all that, and maybe they'll be able to get this together. The chief executive of Frontier had an earnings call on Tuesday in which he said, "I'm proud to say this has been very successful." I don't think so. He did. He said that. He said, "Well, I know. There were some issues at the outset, but less than 1% of our customers and some disappointed customers who, quote, resulted in some negative publicity. But we have those issues behind us. They're resolved," he said on Tuesday. Have things gotten better?
Oh, yeah. took me two days, and they even sent out a service person, and he couldn't do anything.
But it was working fine when it was Verizon.
Oh, yeah, I loved Verizon. Yeah, that was
There's a phrase you don't hear a lot, but it just shows you there's worse. It could get worse. Well.
What I wanted to do, I'm changing.
So you use them for telephone, internet, and TV?
Yes.
You use them for all of them. Oy. So, Well, Verizon was, I think, the CLEC, the incumbent carrier in your neighborhood. So I don't think you'll have another choice for telephone. You could go to a different kind of internet service, certainly.
Oh, yes.
But I think you're stuck with the telephony unless somebody else. Usually the way it works, and I'm not 100% sure what it is in Huntington Beach, but usually the way it works, there is one, you know, they have a monopoly granted by the FCC for cable television and for telephone, because the idea was, well, it's expensive to put this in, so they should have a monopoly for some time. Mm-hmm. So the telephone company, usually there's one telephone company and there's one cable company. Now, Fios has changed things a little bit because you may have other cable options in your area. But if you're going to change, changing telephone provider might be more complicated. Changing internet provider will not be. You can, unfortunately, because there's no other cable company in your area, is there?
Yeah.
Is Comcast or Cox or somebody in your area?
Oh, yeah, there's Time Warner.
Ah, Time Warner. All right. I'm not sure this will be better, but at least they've been around longer. You can switch to Time Warner for all three.
But I talked to my neighbor, and he says, you can't keep your telephone number.
I don't think is the case. I think the number has to be portable. I believe that they're required to do that. Now, I may be wrong on that, so I would call Time Warner and say, I want to see, Time Warner wants you. Time Warner sees this as a huge opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
They hope Frontier screws this up badly, and apparently they're getting their wishes. So I would call Time Warner and say, tell me, I would like to buy your triple play bundle. I want to buy it all. I bet there are a lot of people calling them. In fact, their phones will be very busy right now. The only risk is, you know, Time Warner, like as with any cable company, they can be good or they can be bad depending on how it's implemented in your area. So if you have neighbors who have Time Warner, I'd ask them what they think. Does your neighbor have it, or is he still with Frontier?
One of my neighbors has.
Okay.
Just went to cable.
I would ask him how he likes it. Yeah, I would ask him. It's not a long time, but maybe at least you get some sense of is it working pretty well? And just say, you know, I'm interested in moving. What's your best deal? And can you get my number? Now, it may not be portable, which would be really a sad state of affairs.
Yeah.
They're always, you know, all cell phone numbers are portable, but landlines have different rules. So, but the people to ask is not Frontier. That's the company that wants you.
Yeah.
And Time Warner sees this as a big opportunity, so they're gonna be very interested in giving you a very good deal, because the thing is, it's you're a big moneymaker for them. If they can get you for all three services for a few years, that's big time profit for them. So they're very interested, I can promise you.
Oh, another quick question.
Yeah.
Could I get a company just to do the television?
Absolutely. You can get Time Warner Cable and keep Frontier as your phone. If the phone service is okay, that would probably be the best thing to do.
No, the phone service is terrible.
Oh, man, this company really is. Oh, I'm so sorry.
It took me 2 days. You can't imagine how much I hate Frontier.
This is what I'm looking at, the FCC website. Keeping your telephone number when changing service providers. Under the FCC's local number portability rules, you can switch telephone service providers for wireline, that's what you have, wireless, or voice over internet protocol, and keep your existing number if you remain in the same geographic area. So as long as you are not moving from your home, which you're not, Time Warner can take over your phone number if they want to, if you ask them to.
Okay. All right.
So there's the good news, that as long as you're not changing location, mm-hmm. Now they say don't terminate your service with your existing company until you get the new service. I would let Time Warner do it. And the other issue may be that I don't know if Time Warner offers triple play bundles in your area. They don't in every area. They do in most.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
They do.
You've been getting the brochures in the mail, and pretty soon a young man's going to come to your door and knock on it and say, how do you like Frontier? How would you like Time Warner? I have a feeling that's imminent. This is, of course, a gold mine for Time Warner. I'm sorry this happened to you, but at least you have a choice, Frank. That's unusual in a lot of areas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yes, and he may be gone from the frying pan into the fire, because when Charter takes over, and Charter's another terrible company like Frontier, Charter's buying, they're not buying, are they buying all of Time Warner? Oh. And this is why people become cord cutters, and they don't buy landlines anymore. I mean, what you really want is just really good internet. I would be worth paying a premium for just really good, really reliable internet, and then don't buy a phone line, don't buy cable TV, just get really good internet. That's almost certainly what's going to happen eventually. I have a business class Comcast at home. It's expensive. I think it's $100 a month or something, but it's very fast. I tried to cancel my consumer internet with Comcast, and they said, well, you're on a bundle, and if you can't cancel the consumer internet without canceling the TV too. But they said, you know, what we could do is change you to this plan, and you'd end up paying less, and you'd keep your internet. And I said, all right, do that then. So I have Comcast business class and Comcast consumer class, and I use the consumer class. Is actually the fastest. They've really upped the speed. It's 150 megabytes down and like 10 up, megabits down and 10 up. So I use the Comcast in my office, the consumer in my office, and the business class the rest of the house. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Wow. You know, most areas of the country, we are actually hostage to the local phone company, the local cable company. That's it. You don't get multiple choices. It's one of the reasons we have, considering that we invented the internet here, some of the worst internet, most expensive, slowest internet in the world is here in the U.S. because there's no competition. No competition. And, you know, our last caller, he's lucky he does have a choice, and that's why choice is so important. If Frontier doesn't do a good job, he can go to Time Warner. I wish there were three or four companies. Don't you think that would keep them all a little more honest? But the reason your cable company and your phone company are so horrible is because there's no competition. We're the phone company. Remember Lily Tomlin? We're the phone company. We don't care. We don't have to. It's still true. That was 40 years ago, and it's still true. Competition is good, though, in the wireless area, right? We have four companies. We almost had three, but fortunately, the FTC prevented the merger of Sprint and T-Mobile. So we have four companies, and there's a lot of little companies, too, like, you know, U.S. Cellular and stuff, and they're all competing. And that's one of the reasons, you know, T-Mobile and Sprint have such great deals now because they're number three and four, and they can't beat Verizon and AT&T without competing hard, and they do. Competition makes a huge difference. And it's sad to say we've got these duopolies in the U.S., and I understand, you know, why this happened. The theory was, well, you've spent a lot of money trenching cable out, you got to make your money back. But you know what? That was years ago. They've made their money back. And how? Maybe it's time to let the market get back involved here. Art is in San Diego. Hi, Art. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Art.
Hello, Art.
Hello, Art.
Rosen Jeff Wahlan did that.
Try a little Klingon, see if it works. Sometimes, hey, don't laugh. No, Art's not responding. Now, what do? I press his button?
Hold.
And then I press the whole button? Press the whole button, and then I press his button. I'm locking it. I don't know how phones work. Help me. I need a tech guy for phones. We have a very nice system. I mean, this is like state of the art, right? This is the best system out there, the Telos VX. But
there's no button that says hold.
There's a button that says hold. I press it. Oh, I did it.
It's amazing.
I'm not that bright. I'm going to be honest with you. Not the smartest tool in the shed. Mike in Rockland, California. Hey, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Mike.
Glad to be here. Love your show.
Thank you.
I'm pulling my hair out. I've got a rock-solid home build that I've got 8.1 Windows on it. And when I let it update to Windows 10, I get all kinds of problems.
I guess it's a
pretty consistent problem where the screen flashes once it's finally fully booted up.
And it's just flashing over and over, or it just flashes once, or how much flashing?
Continuous flashing.
That's not good.
You can actually activate a few things, like go in and change Task Manager and get it to boot to safe mode.
Oh, I know what you mean. You mean it's not that you're stuck at a screen that's flickering, and the circle's going around and around and around.
Yeah, I've been there.
And the only thing you could do is shut it down and reboot it, and usually it's fixed.
It doesn't fix it, but after a couple reboots, then it'll offer you to revert back to 8.1.
Right.
And I've done that 3 or 4 different times. I give it a few weeks. Hopefully they've got a new build or something. But nothing's fixed it. Once in a while, I do get this thing called clock watchdog timeout problem in that boot process.
Yeah, Windows, it's not happy. That's for sure. What is it, a recent model computer? You said Windows 8. Did it come with Windows 8?
Well, it's a home build. It's a
you built it yourself. All right.
Yeah, I've even tried. Taking the Radeon GPU board out and let it do the onboard.
Yeah, that was a reasonable attempt because it was clearly a video driver incompatibility, but that didn't fix it.
No, that didn't fix it either.
One more thing you might want to try, and it's just on the off chance this works. You are now, that computer is now registered as Windows 10 owner, so you don't have to worry. There's no key or anything. There's no serial number you need anymore. So at this point, what you can do is you can download Windows 10 from Microsoft, like a clean build of it. And this, I would try this.
Okay, I'm familiar with that.
Before you give up, get the media. It's the Media Creator tool for Windows 10. So you'll go there. It's a download. You build a USB key with the installation media on it. And wipe your disk. Start from scratch, in other words.
Okay.
You want to back up anything, right? But the idea is the upgrade on top of Windows 8, maybe there's some stuff that's not quite working. If you start with a clean, fresh version of Windows 10, that's your best hope. Now, you may have the same problem, and then Windows Update doesn't fix it because it's going to update and try to get the latest drivers. It'll get better as it updates that. You get down the drivers for your NVIDIA card and all that. If it still doesn't work, now you know Windows 10 and your computer don't like each other.
Right.
And I presume you still have your install media from Windows 8 lying around.
Yeah.
So then at that point, you'll want to reinstall Windows 8. Now, when you reinstall Windows 8, you will need the Windows 8 license key. So make sure you have a copy of that before you do all this.
Okay.
But the thing that's important to know is that the way the Windows registration works now, they call it an entitlement. Your computer is entitled to Windows 10. So when Microsoft sees Windows 10 on a clean install of your computer, it'll go, that computer, and it knows your computer from a variety of different devices on it and in a BIOS serial number and all that. That computer, he's a legitimate user, and it'll activate Windows 10, so you don't need a number there.
Great.
Yeah.
Great, that's good.
So I would try that. I mean, of course, back up your data, but that to me, that's the last chance. And if it doesn't work now, then I see no reason why it shouldn't be. You built it yourself recently, right?
Yeah, I built it a couple of years ago.
It should work.
i7.
It should work fine. My, It's, you know, and upgrading an operating system on top of an operating system, there's always a possibility of problems. I think that's all you're experiencing. Windows 10 should work very well on that machine.
Right. I mean, I let my wife's, and I built it. It's an i5, but an Asus motherboard, and it went fine. Yeah. And
I think it'll be fine. I really do. It's just a matter of, let's get a clean install on that guy. Good luck, though. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Google should give you a bash shell on Chrome OS. They should have a dev mode. I would be the only computer I would ever buy if they just had a dev mode on Chrome OS that let you drop into bash and then install stuff and as if you were in bash. Or whatever. I like C Shell or Fish or something. But still, same thing. You should have a command line. But it could be a dev mode. It could be like go into dev mode and then, because maybe grandma doesn't want to see a command line. Although grandma should learn Emacs, grandma, org mode, okay? But it's just, I feel like if they did that, there'd be no reason not to use Chrome OS every day, everywhere. I should be getting my new HP Spectre this week, and I'm praying I can put Linux on it. Praying. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Half an hour to go before we wrap the weekend up. Let's go to Costa Mesa. Sam is on the line. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Leo. I've spoken to you a couple times before on different things, and my new problem is I have about an 8-year-old Intel PC.
Yeah.
It's time to go for a new one. I found one new power spec, B as in boy, 335 desktop computer. And what I wanted to do, is it possible for me to buy the new PC and take out the new WD hard drive that I have in the old one, just plug it in, and then I'm up and running with Windows 7, and I don't have to screw around with transporting my, you know, QuickBooks and Picasa and everything else to the new hard drive?
Wouldn't that be great?
Substitute the old hard drive into my new PC.
Yeah, you might. Probably not. It'll be an adventure. So here's the thing that you have. First of all, a new PC probably is going to have better hard drives, faster hard drives. So that's a reason maybe you wouldn't want to do it. But I understand.
This one's pretty new. It's a WD 1.0 terabyte. I got it a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And
all right.
And plugged it in.
All so right. It's okay.
A hard drive.
Okay. The other issue is it's, of course, set up to work with the motherboard and the other hardware on the old computer.
So,
it's not the end of the world. There are a couple of things will come up. First of all, you probably, before you do the transfer, you should go in there and open the device manager and delete all the devices.
Okay.
Just remove them. It's not going to remove the software, but at least removes them from the device manager. Shut the computer down at that point. Plug it into the new computer. Now, the plug-in play is going to run. The Windows update's going to run, and it's going to say, oh, wait a minute, hold on. You got all this different hardware, and it's going to install, one hopes, drivers for the new thing. You also will probably be able to, maybe before you do this, go to the website for the company that makes the computer, get their drivers from that website, and install them. It's a little sloppy because there's old drivers, but it should be okay. Windows should be able to handle that and say, oh, it's a new, it's different video card, different motherboard, different sound card, different network card. None of that's going to work at first until it gets the drivers for all of that stuff, which you can get from the manufacturer, and Windows Update will update them as well.
Okay.
And plug and play will see them and find them. The other thing is maybe a larger issue, which is Microsoft. They're going to say, oh, wait a minute, you're installing Windows 7 on a different computer.
Mm.
Because the reason they know your computer is your computer is they look at the hardware of it. And they've never told us exactly how much of the hardware they care about. Can you change the sound card and the network card and it'll still work? Can you change the sound card, network card, motherboard, and the video card and it'll work? There's a point at which you've changed so much that Microsoft's going to say this is not the same computer. You will definitely cross that point.
Okay.
And at that point, Microsoft's going to say, this is not a registered copy. You have a choice then. You can either buy a new copy of Windows, or you can call Microsoft and say, oh, I don't know what happened. I got a new video card and a new networking card, and now it says I wrote, and often they'll just give you, oh, yeah, fine, whatever, we'll activate it.
Well, this new PC does actually come with a Windows 7 Professional.
Good.
Besides Windows 10.
So then the other thing you can do is change the serial number, and there's a way, it's in the control panel about this computer. You just change the serial. You says, oh, no, you know, it's under the activation, I think. You say, oh, no, it's a different key now. And put the key from the new computer in there. Then you should be all right. So it might be a little messy. You might experience some weirdness, but it can be done in theory. Just understand that's the issue, is this, you know, the hardware's changed.
Or is this just easier for me to take to the tech geeks and say, here's my old computer, here's my new computer, make it work?
Now let's try it this way first. Well, easier, more expensive. And depending on the quality of the tech geek, it could be a worse nightmare. I mean, the best thing to do would be new computer, install Windows 10 on it, and get your data off the old computer. Your applications probably are not going to be able to move along. You're going to have to re-download those and reinstall them. But that's fine. You want to do it, frankly, you heard our last caller, fresh is good.
Right.
And in the long run, I'm not sure what you're going to spend more time doing, trying to get that old hard drive to work in the new computer. You could still use the old hard drive. You just want to wipe it and reinstall Windows.
Right.
I understand. You don't want to back up your data. You don't want to reinstall apps. You should be backing up your data anyway. This is just an excuse to do what you should be doing anyway. You should always have extra copies of your data up to date. And then installing the applications. The problem is, you know, sometimes people have Office and they've lost the Office disks or whatever they never had.
Right.
That could be a little bit of a pain.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I appreciate your help, Leo.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. It's an adventure. But, you know, isn't computer ownership an adventure after all, really? It's all an adventure. I think you can do it. You know, I always think of it as a learning opportunity. It's just a learning experience. Jay, Providence, North Carolina, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jay.
Hey, Leo, I'll try to be quick. I'm looking for a low-cost device recommendation for testing HDMI signal strength.
Testing HDMI signal strength?
Yep.
Don't know. Do you want an application that runs on your PC, or do you want a standalone device?
Probably a standalone.
I would think you do want a standalone device. I don't know if a PC could actually give you that information.
Actually, I have a Mac, and they're blaming my TV's age for not for taking a couple of tries to get the signal going.
That's not a signal strength issue. That's compatibility issues of various kinds. And it may be a copy protection issue, HDCP. There are signal testers. Amazon sells an HDMI cable signal tester for, unavailable. We don't know when it'll be in stock. What? Well, there are a number of these. This is not a hard thing to find. Here's one for $32. Monoprice sells it. Monoprice is a good place to get this kind of stuff. HDMI signal tester. But I don't think it's the signal quality. In fact, I can almost guarantee you it's not that. It's the cable. You got to have an up-to-date HDMI, you know, whatever the current standard is, I never can remember, 1.4A. You got to have compatibility between the two devices, and their Mac does not support high definition content protection. So your TV set, this is actually pretty normal. It's going, it's trying all this stuff. It's called handshaking. It's going, what's your Mac capable of? They're talking. And you may even see the screen go dark and come back up. You'll see warnings. Sometimes can't see a signal. Oh, now I see. No, I can't see a signal. That's all handshaking. I don't think that is a low signal strength. Although Burke in the chat room is who is our studio engineer, so he knows. He says that some Macs do have issues with HDMI. See, Apple doesn't really want to support. I think Apple doesn't want to support this. Steve Jobs said Blu-ray was a bag of hurt. We'll never support that. And I think that these issues with copy protection, Apple doesn't like it either. So it may just be the way it is. 8888 Ask Leo. Don't forget, we have a website, and I got to plug it more because, first of all, it's free. There's no sign up. It's easy. And everything I talk about, all the links, everything, go there. TechGuyLabs.com. Even audio and video of the show after the fact. TechGuyLabs.com. Yeah, I don't. I think this is more like, is the cable working? This tester. Yeah, it's only $32. I don't think it's probably that. Yeah, if you have a more than a 3 meter cable, of course, long cables are bad.
Did he say the length of the cable?
He didn't say the length. It, maybe if it's a long cable, but I bet it's not that. I bet it's... Yeah, you should try a different cable or shorter cable. And that's another thing. He didn't say the length, though. No, I'm not talking about putting crouton on a Chromebook. That's I don't want that. That's actually horrible. That's a terrible experience. I'm saying let's just have a Chromebook, that everyday Chromebook, does all the things a Chromebook does, the power wash, validates the OS and all of that, secure boot. But there should be a developer mode switch that gives you, because it's Linux. They could easily do this. That gives you a shell. They could easily do that. Give you SSH, the ability to install, you know, Emacs or some simple stuff like that. That would be nice. Crouton is a cheroot solution that lets you run Linux side by side. But it's a terrible solution. I've done it. It's horrible. And it doesn't. And you lose Chrome OS. You're now running. I guess you can go back and forth, can't you? There's Google should just do that. I should try it. I mean, I've tried it before, but I should try it again. It's not gotten any better, has it? Probably not any better. Let's see if there's better solutions. I want a bash shell on Chrome OS. They have a Croce shell. I know about the Croce shell. It's not quite enough. That lets you do SSH. You could do a few things. They have a few commands, not very many. Just need to make it a full shell. I want it just, you know, it's a Linux box, really. Let's just acknowledge that. And just give me a terminal. That would be easy for them to do. And they do it in developer mode. You don't need to do it in regular mode. I'm just really hoping that this HP, I can get Linux on it. Then I'll be happy. I'm using Linux on the old Dell. This is awesome. It's just great. I'm using Debian, and I like GNOME. I know nobody else likes GNOME, but I like GNOME. I played with Xmonad for a while. That's actually pretty cool. Pretty cool. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. On we go. A couple more calls before we wrap the show up. To Kansas and Roland. Hi, Roland. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. How are you today?
I'm great.
Hopefully this is just something simple that I overlooked. But I made a CD that had 130 songs on it.
What? Hello? I'm sorry. I lost you for a minute there.
Sorry about that.
No problem.
I wanted to make the playlist like you normally would for a 10 song CD. I ended up having to write the whole thing like in Word by hand, song by song. The 132 songs.
Oh, that's horrible. You want to know, there must be a print playlist command in iTunes.
Well, I went to what I thought was a print playlist, and I couldn't get it to fit on one page, for example.
I'm looking. I'm in a playlist, which is quite a. I have a long playlist. It's 1,337 songs. It's very elite, and I'm going to go to the print command in iTunes, and I can print it as a CD jewel case insert, as a song list, or as an album list. This looks pretty good. What is it that you don't like about this? Yeah.
Well, when I went to song list, I ended up with five pages of print versus. Going to Word, I could put it in three or four columns to where it's all on one page. To like half a page.
Yeah, they don't give you a lot of formatting commands. You have to print the name, the length, the artist, and the album, and those columns. I understand. You just want the name. Give me the names, man. Give me the names. I mean, you could go into the printer setup, the page setup, and squish it to smaller size or something. That's not very functional, though, is it? What you really would love to do is export that playlist out as, say, a comma separated values. Then you could import it in a spreadsheet like Excel or the Google Sheets.
Right, right.
And then you could say, I don't want that comma. I don't want that column. I could sort it any way I want to. Why can't you do that? Well, because I'll tell you why. iTunes is the worst software ever written. It's just old, and it needs to be rewritten, and we've been begging Apple to do this for the longest time. But I am sure that somebody has written a way, because the playlist is stored in an XML file. That's a text file, kind of a hierarchical text file that you could access. Let's see. Save a copy of a playlist or use it in iTunes on another computer. Select the playlist. Choose File, Library, Export Playlist. All right. So you can export an iTunes playlist. So let's look at that again then. So File, Library, Export Playlist. Oh, there you go. Now, in Export Playlist, you have some choices. Plain text, Unicode text. That just means all the accents and the emojis and the weird characters come along. XML, which is highly structured, and you could easily use, if you were a programmer, you could take Python or something like that and interpret that XML. M3U and M3U8, these are playlist formats for MP3 players. You're not going to use that. So your only choice is to export it as a plain text document. Now, the good news is, even though it's not comma separated or tab separated, it is possible to import that into a spreadsheet. And with a little spreadsheet kung fu, you could get those into individual columns. So the weird thing is, it's not where you'd expect it. It's in the library menu item on iTunes. There's export playlist. Export it as text. Then you're going to have to massage it a little bit. And you can create your own printout. Okay.
Kind of a question 1A. If I understand the problems with iTunes, but since I'm running a Mac, is there a program you'd recommend instead of iTunes that I can still use?
There are other programs like DoubleTwist and stuff, but really iTunes is it. We just have to continue to lobby Apple. They know iTunes is very old, and it was originally written as a bunch of Apple scripts, believe it or not. And it's just they keep adding features on top of it. They need to step back, tear it down like they did with iMovie and they did with Final Cut and they did with Pages, and just tear it down and start over, because it really could be much better.
I agree.
Yep. It's just old and in the way. So you're going to have to do a little extra effort, but export the text version of the playlist and you should be able to modify it to your heart's content. Then print it out.
Okay.
All right.
Try that. Thank you, Leo.
My pleasure. Yeah. And of course, lately there have been some serious complaints about Apple Music going through people's iTunes, matching up songs incorrectly, and deleting the originals. There was a composer. Composer's written a blog post saying, hey, look, a lot of my original music was deleted by Apple's iTunes, which thought it was something else, deleted the original from my hard drive. Now, fortunately, this composer had a backup, as we all should. But that's bad behavior. It's just poorly programmed. And so I'd be very careful with if you're using iTunes, as most of us do, and you're using Apple Music, as some do, some 13 million people now are subscribing to Apple Music, make sure you have backups of all your music. Because if you're letting Apple Music mess with it, it might do something you regret. He said, I have like rare live concert recordings of a song, and Apple Music just replaces it with the single that was released on the record. That's not what I want. Well, that's why a backup is a good thing. Keep the backups. Mike, Georgia, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Leo. I love your show. I listen to you on iHeart. I'm a truck driver.
Right on.
Driving all over the country.
Thank you.
Hey, a quick question. Is that Tunnel Bear, is that Android friendly?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great.
I got a 30-minute video on my Samsung Tab 4, and I only need the last 15 minutes of it, but it's telling me that the file is too large to edit. Is
Can you connect your tab to a computer and pull the file off?
I stopped using computers probably 5 years
ago. Yeah, what do you need a computer for? Yeah.
I mean, I listen to you, and 90% of it flies over my head, but I'm hoping that by osmosis, some of it will soak in and I'll, you know, see the light, you know?
There might be an Android video editing program that can handle that giant file. See, that's the issue, is you have to be able to load that file into memory. And it's so big, because it's half an hour, it's probably 4 gigabytes or more. It just can't edit that. It needs to have enough extra space to do that. I mean, you might try restarting your tablet and making that editor the first thing you run. That might help, because it might clear out memory.
Okay, I didn't think of that.
Yeah. There are other Android video editing programs that might do a better job for you. Of course, the easiest thing would be to copy it to a computer, a laptop, or a desktop, and then there's no issues in size limitation.
Gotcha. Okay.
There's AndroVid, and there's Vidi, and there's Andromeda Video Editor and Video Maker Pro. There are a lot of third-party Android editors. How about this one? This one might do it, because it's just about trimming, which is what you want to do. VidTrim Pro. Give that a shot. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.